Accession number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, Reel 12.
Mr. G.S. Richardson, Reel 12. The breakthrough through the German and Italian lines and out into the desert, Mr. Richardson, what do you recall of it?
Well, I was on the battalion signal wagon. There must have been about a dozen of us on it. Our main supply signal wagon was behind us. Most of the other signalers were out with the separate companies, going along with them. We went out and we could see this huge light. There was everything firing, that set up both his guns firing traces. Our artillery had firing smoke shells and artillery shells in front. Our 9th Battalion had already gone through their minefields and took up positions at each side, setting everything on fire that they could and making as much commotion and noise as they could. We were told to make as much commotion and noise as we could, whereas previous we'd gone out in the desert and we'd been as quiet as we could. We went through and any enemy we saw, we were told to kill. We hadn't room for prisoners. And I remember when we got right in the middle of it, we were going through, we were seeing screaming Italians running around. They were more surprised than anything else. They hadn't expected anything like this. There was a full brigade of troops with all the supporting arms, all rushing through, just as fast as the transport could take them. Those two high ties jumped under our wagon, unarmed and in, I think, little more than pyjamas, and shouting Cairo, George, and we just said, oh, we've got a couple of prisoners, just tell them to sit down and, you know, do nothing. We carried on, and I remember right in the heat of it, we all started singing, because we're all on trucks, and we could hear right across, "Abide with me." I've always said that this is a Dermot Infantry war hymn, and we could hear it across left, right and centre, "Abide with me" being sung in unison. It was marvellous. And all this racket going on. And, of course, screaming from both Italians and all men had been hit. I don't know how many men we lost, but I don't think we lost a lot going through. But we certainly killed a lot of Italians. And they were screaming to be taken prisoners, but we were told that we didn't have a transport to take them. But we went forward, and I think we must have travelled anything from 15 to 20 miles before we actually got out into open desert again. No troops of any kind. And then we were told to change direction left, which would be, west. And we tromped along there and went right around the other side of Bir Hakeim and then turned south.
Did you find your way okay? What was it like actually navigating? Were you with other trucks at this stage?
Well, we were with other trucks. More or less all battalion headquarters and others of the 6th Battalion were all more or less kept them together, and we were going along in lines, rows of trucks, left, right and centre. After we'd gone through, I understand that the RSA had come through with their empty wagons and picked the 9th Battalion up. They had burnt the wagons and they all came up and all followed us on. And I understand that the order was every man for himself to get back. And I think at the end of each day, each company commander being given a map reference to reporting that. and we were more or less on our own for days on end.
Once you'd got through, and next morning you found yourself, as you say, on your own, what are the initial reactions and feelings to that?
Well, we'd had a traumatic experience. We'd come through enemy lines and we were still unharmed. I was still unwounded, and I was thanking God over and over again that I was still alive. But we knew that we were on the run. We knew that we were retreating, which is against the British Army rules and regulations. The British Army never retreats, but by God, that was one retreat. But yet it was proclaimed as being a major victory by everybody else. And where apparently where it happened, our tank battle had been lost. We were two brigades strong. We'd lost a brigade. The South Africans had broken out at the same time. And over to our immediate left, our other brigade had broken out at the same time as us. And they had done exactly the same as us. And later on we heard that we'd gone through two divisions of Italians. We didn't see many Germans. We'd gone through two divisions of Italians. The German Panzers had gone right round and they're supposed to have cut us off. Those two divisions of Italians had been left there to hold us, not to engage us. We would have been engaged by the Germans after it cut us off to the sea. We ran and we got over the Egyptian border and we checked in.
Did you come across stragglers?
Oh yes, quite a lot. And by the way, at the end of the end of the second day, we were run short of water. We didn't have much. All our petrol cans that we had on board were beginning to run down a bit on fuel. Because it was a big 3-ton wagon that we were on, and took quite a lot. All our wagons, of course, had sun compasses on the bonnets. We knew whether we were going east, west, north, or south by the sun compass. Of course, our officers also had their own compasses, and sergeants, same NCOs had compasses. I didn't have a compass then, but I had later on. We weren't allowed maps unless we were on particular exercises where we needed map references and references to follow. But that would, as soon as the exercise was over, the maps would be taken in. We didn't want maps to be taken over by, if we were captured by the Germans. All our papers and all our most of our equipment had been taken from us the latter part, and they were all back in Biesla on great coats and things like that. We didn't have, we only had our light packs with us at this time. I don't think we even bothered to take our bivouac tents down. We just left everything that was static more or less left there. I know that we left loads and loads of munitions. There wasn't much water to leave because we took all the water that they could.
Had this material been dug out of sight and covered?
Of the munitions were already dug in. And I think that there was some blown up before we left. And others was just more or less piled over with sand. And probably some still lying there in the sand. Up in, probably the Arabs have dug up quite a lot since then. We dropped our two Itai prisoners off getting towards the end of the second day. They were shouting for water, and we hadn't any water to give them. And I thought, well, okay, somebody else can pick you up. That way, can find you where. Now the Germans will come along eventually. What happened to them, I don't know. But I wouldn't have fancied the chance myself. It was our sergeant that said, "Stop the wagon! Stop the wagon! Off!" And
who was he?
That was Sergeant Scott. So off them two went, and what happened to them we don't know. But that was our two Italian
prisoners.
They
go off easily, or were they protesting?
No. They wanted to go with us back to Cairo, George. They were heading for prisoner war camps. they probably stood a lot better chance going back with us than what would have been stranded out in the desert, because terrible place, that desert. Anyway, we reported back to our first, and I think it was just on the Egyptian border, well below Tobruk, into the inland from Hellfire Pass, inland from there. And we'd been given a map reference, and some of our guns, we'd even had to help them get through sand dunes. The guns, the 25-pounders, on the back of the transporters, I forget what to call them now, but they had winches, and sometimes to get them through sand dunes, they'd run forward with their empty, run a rope out and pull the gun forward on the rope to the gun carriage and then go on. We helped quite a lot to keep, because we knew that we wanted to keep as many guns as we possibly could going along with this. I think on the round about, 4 or 5 days out from this retreat, there were still quite a good column of us, still of battalion headquarters. We still had our RSM page with us. And one night we'd pulled in to stop and do what repairs we could and have a meal, whatever we could, and we heard this big commotion over to our left. And RSM Page asked me, and I think about four of us, to go with them. And we went over and we crept over, and there was a German lager of tanks. And you should have had a commotion near me again. They were all in a circle, guns pointing out, all the Marfort tanks and all the Germans inside. Bonfires raging, the lot. No, they were on a winning streak. You see, they were chasing the army. And they were there, and RSM Page looked and says, "Good God, look at that lot. Let's get out of here." We crept back. He got back to our wagons. He says, "Push your wagons for at least half a mile before you start the engines, and then go." And we did. We pushed the wagon and started the engine up, and off we went. But it must have been best part of a full Panzer division, all lagered up.
Was this before you got back to your rendezvous?
It was on the road 4 or 5 days out from Gazala Lane. And then...
What time of the year was this breakout?
So in June we found ourselves going back down, heading south through the western desert.
You must have lost a great deal of men and equipment in spite of this.
Yes, we're all scattered. We had all kinds of troops travelling along with us. We're in no regular formation. Although roughly the 6th Battalion tried to hold itself, each battalion tried to hold itself together in fighting units.
Were there any men who haven't come through this experience will begin to show signs of cracking, you know, they wouldn't get back? Or?
Yes. Just before we came back on the escarpment outside of Mersey Metro, about the night before we got back to Scotland and Miles Metro, we had quite a strong battle. The 9th Battalion lost a lot of men in a big skirmish. The 6th Battalion had gone out, or some of the troops from the 6th Battalion had gone out. We got separated from a lot of the our fighting men of our companies, and one of these nights there was one of our lads, a singular, Whitwell I think it was called, he'd been crying. There was that much stuff flying about, and we were lying down there trying to gained our slit trenches because the desert was very hard. He couldn't get behind, just behind stones and that. And he said, I'm going. And he went out and never saw him again. Whether he was captured or whether he was killed, I don't know. But he went out to give himself up. He was the only one about platoon that ever knew that happened, except another one happened in Sicily.
Does that have any effect upon the rest of you when you see what's going on?
Well, he was one of our pals, one of our mates, and we thought, well, he's cracked up. And he was one of them that had actually evacuated from Dunkirk area. And he was a bit younger than I was, probably about a year younger than I was. He'd been in the Territorial Army before the war. And he had just absolutely gone to pieces. There's one or two signs of cracking up, because we didn't know where we were going to get our next drink of water or a meal from. We knew that the German army was going along with us. We were passing them, they were passing us. And we hadn't a clue what was happening. Anyway, we got to this escarpment, just about three miles above Mersmitru. I know we could see Mersmitru down in the bottom. And there was actually some New Zealand troops had been moving up into this area, but they had been told to retreat with everything that they could. Our company commander had sent one of our officers down to see what he could get from us, and we have supplies, and he came back with a wagon load of canned milk and fruit and all kinds of stuff like that from a big nappy tent. It was mostly luxury goods, but I remember I had a big tin of carnation milk. I drank it straight down. I'll probably be sick after it. Fair enough, I felt sick after it because it was too rich for the way we'd been eating. And we were there in this wadi, and there wasn't much happening at this time. Our main troops had left us. Why we'd been left, I don't know. But for the RSM page, in the next wadi over was our, what had used to be our B echelon, advanced B echelon, the Kooks. Colour Sergeant Handel, the quartermaster, and all the Kooks, and some MT drivers. They parked their trucks in this wadi. I know about 100 yards over, we were in another wadi, with an empty tank going up on the top of the wadi that didn't belong to us. It was a DLI, 2-pound empty tank. We'd spent the night there, and I think RSM Page, and I'm sure it was Major Ovenden, was with us. We had stone palisades made up in front of us along the front of this wadi on the escarpment, facing outwards. We could see the sea some 3 or 4 miles over. Nothing much was happening around about just early afternoon. RSM Page spotted these armoured cars coming in, looking through his binoculars, and we had flag signals to wave for whether they were friendly or not. He waved the flag, and one of the forward armoured car stopped and waved the flag back, and RSM shouted, I think they're South Africans. And then when I got to about 300 or 400 yards from us and still coming, he shouted, the Bosch, you know, regular, we never called them Bosch, we, you know, the Jerry's to us, but they were Bosch to him, fire. And one armoured car come within 50 yards in front, firing, and we were lying behind these piles of stones, and we came under fire. There was 3 armoured cars, a wagon load of troops we saw disembark and spread themselves out and started firing spandos. I think it was 2 spandos. The troops were spread out. I fired at a man that was on the leaning out of the turret one side, and he dropped, and I thought I've killed him, and I said, I've got him, and Hubert Latham at the other side of me, he'd also fired, and said, no, he didn't, I got him. Jimmy Sixsmith, who was at the right side of him, shouted, don't be bloody daft, you both got one. That armoured car stopped 50 yards from us. The next armoured car stopped and was firing about 100 yards back. The third one was about 300 yards back. We were firing armoured piece and bullets. We were firing as fast as we can. We had two Bren guns, and they only fired a few rounds and sized up with sand. It was only rifle fire that we were sending back, but armoured piece and bullets. But we were firing and fighting for about an hour. Unknown to us, some of the Germans had offloaded, had come round to our right, and all of a sudden the RSM shouted, stop firing, our one lad's being taken prisoner. And there's Colour Sergeant Handel and his cooks all marching up. I'd say, our big red and white stripes, and I stood up, and he's absolutely stood up on his battle dress. And there was only a handful of Germans taking these out. Anyway, we stopped firing until they'd gone out of the road. And the Germans stopped firing. The one armored, the first armored car stopped there. The second armored car went away. The third armoured car had been badly hit, must have been killed, and there, that was left. We'd been firing the tyres, we'd been firing anything with our armoured bullets. And the close range, you know, armoured bullets have been piercing them. And we must have killed quite a few Germans, but I don't know how many. I reckon there was about two dozen Germans infantry and these three armoured cars. Anyway, they disappeared with our prisoners. So I'd made an no more action until it got towards dusk. These armoured cars are still stuck. So RSM went forward with two or three, and they came back with some mops out of the second armoured car, and they got talking, and the mops were marked out with larger positions and all kinds. And it was the 21st Panzer Regiment that we were fighting. And we decided to do a breakout. And around about 8 o'clock again, 8 o'clock at night, we pushed our wagons, what we had left, out, and away we went and scuttled south again. We passed quite a lot of action and finished up with probably half a dozen wagons only back of what eventually became Alamein Lane.
When you completed that action, which was quite violent, what state were you in?
Oh, we knew that we'd won a little action. We'd come out of it again. This was the third, actually the second breakout we'd done. When we thought we'd been surrounded entirely, because we could hear fighting going on both left and right of us, and we could see Panthers moving down the coast road. We knew we couldn't go down the coast road. We went out in the desert again, and we were quite a way back from Mesmer Trail back to Alamein, and it's quite a good trek. I think we must have done it over two days, but I don't think we stopped.
Was Major Ovenden in command of this little group?
Yes, with RSM Page. RSM Page was wounded in this action, and I'm not sure whether it was this action or just a little later action that he was awarded the MCA, Military Cross. It was something big for an RSM to get, because it was most of the officers that got the MCA. And there was very few of us left. I think no more than 30 of us out of what it started out to be, probably 120.
What was your morale like at this stage?
Well, I don't think we had time to be scared. We're wondering where we're going to. We're wondering what was going to happen. We're fully expecting being surrounded and taken prisoner or killed any time. We're young men and we're fit. We weren't very well fed, but at least I was reasonably robust. And we just trusted in our own simple logic that we were heading the way that we had to go to get back.
You mentioned the fact that you were a religious person, religious beliefs. How strong and helpful were they in matters of crisis like this?
Well, during this little battle on the escarpment above Mesmer Trail, Hubert Latham next to me, at the top of our wadi had been hit. I forget what the name of the block of stones that we've got behind. We had a name for it, but I can't remember it. Spandorf, I had come across it early on, and he was splatted right down his back. Missed me. He was right next to me, but missed me. But I put my hand over on his back, and it was all bleeding. All blood, right way down his battle dress jacket. And he said, "Oh my God, I've been hit." And he started saying, "Oh Father, which art in heaven." And I started saying with him, "Jack and Jimmy Sixsmith is the other side." We thought we'd had it. And the anti-tank gunner, by the way, he'd been firing and firing at these, and he'd been hit. And he'd carried on firing, and he had legs and arms. And he had one of our blokes, one of our infantry blokes, something to reload and fire. And I think Major Overton gave him a tablet of morphine, and he died in his gun seat. But I don't know who he was, but he was a DLI, but he wasn't one of our battalion. And
so the question of religious belief in a time of crisis and great danger, that's a source of strength to you.
Oh, yeah, it always has been. I've gone to church. I used to be church warden of Calvin, by the way, three years ago, church warden. I was on the parochial church council for years, but I packed it up there. I don't like the vicar to you now. Nothing to do with this story. All my religious beliefs, I remember I used to go to communion. One of the very few troops, our paddy in the lane, was always back at Beish Lawn, and every Sunday morning he would hold a communion service for them that managed to get back. And I used to go back a little, maybe half a mile back, go to communion, and then creep back in the lane whenever I could, not very often. One of the very few other ranks that did that, two or three officers.
Does a soldier, in your opinion, need something to cling to in that hour of need, that moment of danger?
Yes, I had a New Testament given to me by a man down in, when we were in Willand, in Devon. He gave me, it was an American New Testament, because it had the American National Anthem in the front. But I wrote in it that had been given to me in Willand, and I had that all through the war with me. I used to read passages out now and again to myself. But yes, I always thought, well, okay, offer a prayer of thanks when you come out of an action. Offer a prayer of hope that you get through it before we went in. I remember when later on, when we were lying waiting to go forward at Alamein, that was the last thing I remember doing before we got up the mill, was say one or two prayers to myself. But I'm not saying that that was the way everybody else felt. Probably most of them thought that there was no good whatever the way we were being treated that time. Anyway, we got back. And our columns were formed up. We first of all reported to one place, some of our divisional military police sent us to one post to report. We reported in, and they told us, give us directions to find our own battalion. And we got in, and there were very few of us of our battalion left. The B echelons, the adjutant secretary, the orderly sergeant in the battalion office, he was the one that was taking most of the records as we got back there, and he had already sent word back that I was missing in action, and that they were send a telegram back to my mother to say that I'd come through and I was still okay.